Doc was 8 steps up the shadowy staircase along with Professor Long, leaning heavily on his sword stick to propel himself when he realized that they were being followed.
Who is there?
Doc drew his empty Lama from its holster.
I warn you, I have a blaster.
Doc, it's me.
Oh, Ricky. Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, Adams to Betsy. You scared the life out of us.
But to what do we owe this pleasure?
I saw you run. I followed because...
He'd been trying to stick close to Professor Long, but didn't say it.
Because?
It's a good idea. Hiding until everything blows over, since your blaster's empty. You know?
Ah, yes. You remembered that, did you? Then my ploy would have definitely not worked on you. What about your guns?
They're still with my gear, down where we slept.
But you never travel without your guns.
I've not been thinking.
I understand. This has been a trying 48 hours for you. Indeed, for us all.
You want me to go get them?
I do not believe that would be wise at this precise moment. Come, let's ascend out of Hell's Maw like Dante Alighieri.
Right.
Together, the three of them scrambled up the stairs to the second-story landing.
Maybe we shall find something we can use up here.
I have a lab up here. There may be something there.
Does it have a lock on the door?
Yes, it does.
Then it'll do.
Doc didn't like abandoning his friends, but with no ammunition, he knew he was of little help here. The trio hurried along the upper corridor. Down in the maze of first-floor corridors, Jack was watching the two bikes approaching, judging their speed by the sound of their engines. As the foremost rider came into range, he kicked off. He clipped the rider in the face. She whirled the chain about her. The chain caught Jack's extended leg and threw him, but the rider found herself jarred back in her seat, her hand slipping from the handlebars. Mish fired, sending a single bullet into the gas tank of the hurtling motorbike, and it went up in a fireball. The rider streaked past Mish and down the corridor, her body wrapped in flames. The second bike was bearing down on Jack, even as he pushed himself to his feet.
Oh, shit.
Mish fired again, unable to see clearly, spraying shots from left to right in an arc, hoping to cut the rider down. Jack rolled again, swiftly getting out of the way of the rider before he got himself flattened. As he rolled, he flipped his right arm out with a practice gesture, and a knife dropped into his hand. Then, with the bike zooming away from him, Jack threw the knife, aiming at the bulk of the dark shape that sat astride the saddle. The bike was 6 feet from Mish when the rider slumped over in the saddle and went keeling left. Mish leapt as the out-of-control bike careened toward her. The bike clipped her, and she was knocked head over heels. Mish was out. But Jack was trapped, too, the chain snagged around his leg, tufts of fire like crabgrass flickering all the way down the corridor. In those flickering flames, Jack saw figures running, heading toward him. Sekmen. But Sekmen from Kill Island, here to get revenge on the people who stole the Angel's Heart. Jack reached for his gun. Even as he drew it from its holster, the lead Sekmen reached him and kicked it out of his hand, causing his hand to strike the wall with enough force to make it go numb.
Well, look at this weird bastard.
Jack made a grasp for the man's leg, but the Sekmen booted Jack in the head, hard enough that he found himself spiraling into the dark embrace of unconsciousness. And then, nothing. JB, Christy, and Mildred, along with the wounded Professor Saraband and the other white coat, were under siege by muties and Sekmen. They had retreated to a lab off the corridor that ran at a right angle to Ryan's current location, the same corridor where Jack and Mish had taken on the bikers. The armorer had tried to defend their position, but bullets and crossbow bolts were flying all over, and it was looking downright impossible.
How's the white coat?
It wasn't that JB cared. He couldn't give a nuke shit for anyone who wasn't on the team. He just asked because he wanted Mildred back in the fray as soon as possible, and he knew she wouldn't leave a wounded man like that.
He's lost some blood, but he's okay. Just grazed is all.
I feel lightheaded.
That shot.
I'm gonna die here. I'm gonna die here among strangers.
Christy took his hand and looked him in the eye.
I'm Christy.
I'm Phil. I'm Phil.
See, Phil, we're not strangers anymore. And you're not going to die.
Why you say that?
Have faith.
Oh, have faith, she says. Oi!
The Humes are in there. You take the left side.
Outside, the intruders were taking up positions to either side of the single door into and out of the lab.
They're coming.
Professor, is there another way out of this laboratory?
What? No, just the door.
Mildred looked at the windows. They had all been boarded with wood and heavy metal grills for the protection of those inside. It would be impossible to get through them in time.
Go!
JB was across the far side of the room and had the newcomers framed in the doorway. He aimed as many as he loved, cutting the legs up from under the first segment to enter. Two went down, but then a Swampy came striding through, a great hulking brute of a thing, throwing one of the falling segment aside before he could even drop to the floor. JB's gun kept up its stuttering assault, but the armorer watched as the bullets drummed uselessly against the Swampy's legs and torso, embedding in the mutie's gut to no noticeable effect. Behind the Swampy, other figures were entering through the doorway, humans and scabbies, a mass of bodies, everyone armed. In an instant, the Swampy was upon JB. The armorer dodged, but it was like dodging a rain shower. You ducked one way, but you still got wet. The Swampy struck JB with a brutal punch straight down upon his crown. JB stumbled deliriously for a moment before collapsing. 10 feet to the left, Mildred and Christy were offering up what defense they could as things went to hell. A Sekhman dropped due to a well-placed shot from Mildred's pistol. Another stumbled back into the wall clutching his gut where 2 9-millimeter bullets from Christy's Glock nailed him. But there were too many. Mildred disappeared beneath a scrum of Sekhman, 4 figures dragging her down. Christy found herself face to face with a scabby called Boyles, who smiled cruelly as he juggled a serrated blade from one hand to the other.
Gonna enjoy this, Hume.
I don't think so. You brought a knife to a blaster fight.
Christy raised her pistol, but the scabby dodged, and the bullet went wide. Boyles made a motion with his knife hand, and Christy followed it with her eyes. And that was enough for him to deliver the gut punch that caused her to double over in pain.
Who brought what, Hume? Who brought what?
Christy sagged, unable to draw breath. And without a breath, she couldn't utter the prayer that might have saved her. Couldn't call upon the Gaia power to give her strength once more. Boyles kicked her hard in the side, and she found herself slipping in and out of the moment, tripping towards unconsciousness. Lying on the floor, Christy watched, her vision blurring, as Boyles plucked her gun from her hand. Then he turned it on her.
No. Gaia, no!
Don't kill them. Not yet. I need them for the end.
The last of these words resounded around Christy's mind as she finally lost her grip on consciousness. Boyles looked at Bizarra as if he'd been betrayed.
I wanted to kill Humes. You promised.
You will. We all will.
Beside Bizarra, Brother Tankard entered the room, desperation writ large on his face.
Is it here? Did you find it?
Bizarra said nothing, just watched as the stupid human consulted his men.
It's here, Brother Tankard.
Oh, praise the angel.
Tankard paced across the room, stepping over the fallen bodies of JB and 2 of his own men, wrinkling his nose as he smelled the pungent aroma of the Swampy. There, resting on a worktop amid a snake's nest of wire, set between 2 computer screens that had gone black with the power out, was the CPU from the satellite, the Angel's Heart. Tankard rested his hands reverentially against its sides, stroking the protective casing like it was a cat.
Baron Basu will be so relieved, as we all are. Angel rise, angel fall.
Boyles, Slit, get these humans tied. Use those wires. I want them outside in the corridor, where Ryan Cordo will see them.
The 2 muties got to work, binding Mildred, Christy, JB, and the 2 now unconscious white coats. There were 2 Scalies, Warts and Saul, and 3 human Sekhmen still pursuing Ryan. He knew that it was hopeless. All he could do was run a circuit around the square of the building's corridors, which meant in 2 more turns he'd end up back where he'd started. And that meant being pinned on all sides.
Fire blast!
Ryan took a corner at speed and crashed through a door to his right. He found himself in a room similar to the one he had awoken in just a day before. That in itself seemed unbelievable, that he had woken in the Institute just one day earlier after the sonic assault. That sonic attack would have been ideal, a perfect weapon to disable his remaining attackers. But that was out of the question. With the power down, it simply wasn't an option.
I don't see him!
Can't hear him, either.
He's right. No running, you hear?
Ryan had hoped to evade them, but he hadn't counted on the noise his footsteps made in these corridors. His opponents were thinking things through while he was simply reacting, cornered like a rat. Time to get strategic, he realized. He scrambled across the room on silent tread, reached the windows, boarded and grilled like the others in the compound. Moonlight filtered through in slatted lines where there were narrow gaps between the boards, and Ryan peered through. Out there, he saw the overgrown tangle of the old playing field, and at its far edge, the shack where the alka-fuel was distilled. But it was no use. The windows were locked tight. He couldn't get out there this way. He turned back, eye adjusting to the dim light, and saw the two camp beds and the scattering of personal possessions that indicated this was the room where at least two of the whitecoats slept. They were books, ancient photos, a glass beaker with the sludge of calf dregs in its bottom. Nothing he could use. Out in the corridor, the invaders were moving slowly now, checking the rooms. Ryan's would be next, he knew. The 6 hour had 3 shots left, and then it was just him. He didn't even have his rifle. But there was his boot knife, the vicious panga that could hack through a forest, or a man. They were coming now, trying to be quiet. Ryan made noise. He kicked the covers off one of the camp beds and booted the metal frame.
In there!
His attackers came then, running into the room en masse, hoping to overpower him. Ryan had the bed frame up in his hands by then, and he ran at them, using it to push them back, trapping a man at a scaly on either side of the open door. Their heads slammed the wall. Ryan let go of the bed and drew his 6 hour, even as the bed began to drop. His two would-be attackers were fighting with the bed frame in the darkness, pushing it away. Ryan point-blanked both of them in the foreheads. The man died instantaneously, while the scaly keeled over, but thrashed, still alive. Ryan stepped past him and drilled another bullet into the back of his skull. Another scaly charged into the room, and Ryan kicked the fallen bedframe hard with his heel, driving it into the front of the mutie's legs, causing him to topple. Ryan dropped two, drawing the panga from his boot sheath in the same motion as he dropped the useless 6 hour, driving the point of the blade home into the scaly's thick-skinned head. Blood sprayed across the room, and Ryan withdrew the blade and stabbed the second time, 15 inches of steel burying itself in the soft tissue of the scabby's nose and up into his cranial cavity. The two remaining sick men were in the doorway now, and Ryan saw a crossbow in one man's hand. He leapt, rolling aside as the bolt fired. Ryan sprung up from the floor and into the sick man's trunk. Both men were driven back in the action, and Ryan plunged the panga's blade deep into the sick man's torso, low in the stomach, in a swift in-and-out motion. The second man's gun came up. Ryan moved the crossbow-wielding sick man's body before him. His human shield's crossbow clattered to the floor. Ryan shoved him forward as the other sick man fired a second time into his colleague. Then, Ryan was barreling toward him like a freight train. The gunman smacked against the wall and found himself face to fist with Ryan's left hand, even as Ryan's right drove his knife across the man's belly. The sick man stood, swaying in place, propped up by the wall. Ryan stepped in, plunged his knife into the Kill Islander's belly a second time, twisting it as it buried hilt deep in the man's insides. The sick man vomited a rush of blood over his chin and sagged over, dropping his gun as his body went limp. Ryan snatched up the gun, made to check it, drawing JB's lighter from his pocket, and only then realizing that he still had it from when he'd lit the bridge dynamite. Ryan cupped the flame in his hand to disguise it as he examined the weapon. It was a Colt King Cobra, Magnum cartridges, a six-shooter. Ryan spun out the barrel and checked. It had 2 shots left. He leaned down and swiftly checked the sick man's pockets, but found no further ammunition.
Fire blast.
2 shots would have to do. Ryan snatched up his discarded 6 hour and slipped it back into his holster. Maybe he'd find that ammo store JB had harvested. Maybe he'd be lucky yet. Under Bizarro's instruction, the 4 remaining intruders in the compound gathered up Jack and Mish, adding their tied and unconscious forms to the group that was forming in the corridor close to the stairwell.
What do you plan to do with these heathens?
Bizarro surveyed them with her one good eye under the moonlight that lanced through the courtyard windows. The albino, the girl with streaks in her hair, the medic, the redhead, the weaponsmith, and 2 whitecoats. Someone was missing. The old man and the boy.
Curse it! Ryan's allies are still out there. 2 of them. An elderly stick and an adolescent. Find them.
What about this Ryan guy?
He will come to us. with his friends in danger, he will come to us.
Upstairs, Dr. Tanner, Ricky Morales, and Professor Eden Long had reached Long's laboratory. Now they were hunting around in the almost pitch darkness, looking for something they could use as a weapon.
I still think I could go back down there and get to my weapons.
I do not think that would be a wise course of action.
I can be real sneaky.
Of that I have no doubt, but it's still too dangerous. You'd need to locate ammunition too, don't forget. Remaining here, we can lay a trap for anyone who comes through that door and hopefully overpower them.
Hopefully?
Let us say that realistically, the odds may not favor us. But that is no cause to simply give up.
Doc's a fighter.
Now, come. Let us find whatever we have here that might be employed in our defense.
Up there. Someone's moving about. And it has to be the old man and the boy. They could not have got out.
You want me to send one of my men? I still got Jay up on the wag gun.
He is well positioned to guard the exits, and I do not want Ryan Cawdor escaping.
You said the Angel Chiller would come to us.
He will. Slit, go up to the floor above. Find the last of Cawdor's allies and bring them down here.
The swampy called Slit nodded his thick head.
Yes, Undermonstress.
On second thought, Slit, just kill them. We have more than enough humes with which to make Ryan suffer.
Slit nodded his broad head again and began to ascend the stairs. The scabby called Boyles, who was the only other remaining Mutie soldier from Bizarra's scout team, bowed before her.
Ma'am, since we have more than enough humes here, can I chill one? Red Hair tried to chill me. I want her to taste a bullet from her own fucking blaster, see?
He held Christie's Glock aloft, turning it so that it caught the moon silver light through the courtyard windows.
They will all die in time. Have patience. You'll get your chance.
When?
When it will most devastate Ryan Cawdor and break his feeble spirit for good.
Boyles paced nervously back and forth, a gun heavy and ominous in his hand. Ryan exited the room where he had killed his five attackers, leaving behind a bloodbath. He checked the corridor, wary of further attack, hugging the wall in the shadows, away from the light cast by the moon through the courtyard windows. It did not bode well. There were no gunshots, no sounds of combat. That meant either his people were down, or they'd somehow beaten their attackers, but decided to stay silent so they could throw him a surprise party. Ryan stalked along the corridor, and as he did, something caught his eye. Across the courtyard, where the whitecoats grew food and medicine, he could see the opposite side of the quadrangle, and through it, the corridor that sat at a right angle to the one he was in. There, through the windows, he saw the Mutie woman Bizarra, along with three other figures, and a passel of what looked like dead bodies. He recognized Christie's vibrant hair immediately, and for a moment his heart sank. But then he saw one of the sec men lift her to her knees, her head slumped, hair down over her face. It meant she was alive. She had to be. You wouldn't place a dead body like that, not in a kneeling position. Ryan watched as two more bodies were propped up on their knees, Mildred and the white coat called Saraband, Ryan thought. They were laying a trap, he knew, and his friends were the bait. They were the lure that would force him to enter the kill zone where he'd have nowhere left to run. They were setting the bodies along in the center of the corridor, which meant approaching from either end would be equally treacherous. It would be a long walk, all of it exposed. But there was a third way, Ryan realized, through the courtyard. Ryan moved quietly in the darkness, retracing his steps, heading for the glass door that opened onto the courtyard at the east side, opposite where Bizarra and her allies were propping up his friends.
Come on, you psychotic bitch. Let's finish this now, once and for all.
On the second story, Slit was meticulously checking the rooms. He listened once, then kicked at each sealed door in turn, knocking them with such force that they tore from their hinges. Slit needed no weapons. He was a weapon. A big, unstoppable brute who could crush anything or anyone he got his swampy hands on. In the lab, Doc, Ricky, and Professor Long could hear the Swampy approaching.
Adams to Betsy, whatever's out there is going to chill us.
Let us table the pessimism. We have been in worse situations than this, have we not, Ricardo?
The last one we were in ended with Joe.
Who's Joe?
A very dear friend.
Doc was looking at his Lama, wondering if he might yet bluff their way out, using it. After all, their enemies didn't know that he had no ammunition in it, did they? It was worth a go.
One last roll of the dice.
Outside in the corridor, another door crashed open against straining hinges, and the heavy footsteps halted for a moment. Then they stopped closer. Doc was knocked off his feet as the door burst inward, the empty Lama spinning away across the floor. The Swampy strode into the room, swiped Ricky with a backhanded blow that sent the lad and the pipe he'd snatched up careening backward into a stool. Then he reached for Eden Long. The woman scrambled to get out of the monstrosity's grasp. Ryan crossed the courtyard in a swift run, the Colt King Cobra clutched ready in his hand. Azara didn't see him, for she was facing the opposite direction, listening to the sounds of Slit destroying the upstairs rooms, toying with a knife in her hands. But Tankard caught sight of Ryan's approaching figure.
He's coming across the yard!
What?
Azara turned, as did the two guards who remained, Boyles and the human Sekman. Ryan fired the Colt as they looked up, and a full-sized window pane shattered, showering Bizarra and her allies with glass.
Twist, damn you.
Ryan had one shot left. He knew the Sticky could repel a bullet, didn't want to take that chance. A scabby and two humans were hustling around, taking cover as he ran at them. Ryan fired, and the Sekman to the right went down, a bullet drilling into his back. Then Ryan was in the frame of the broken window he had shot out, scanning the scene. There were Christy and Mildred in the white coat, all of them kneeling, watching hopefully, their wrists tied behind their backs with computer wires, ankles likewise tied. On the floor, similarly tied, lay JB, Jack, and Mish, as well as the white coat whom Ryan had never caught the name of, and two Sekmen, both of them out of it, one with a caved-in helmet that seemed to have become a part of his face. Three guards, including the Mutie bitch, and Ryan with no ammo.
Let them go.
Ryan raised the pistol in his hand. Bizarra looked at Ryan with her lone eye, and he saw the glint of the bullet he had buried in her left all those weeks ago.
If you could shoot me, you would, Ryan Corder. I know you.
I don't know you. All I know is you were front and center of a revolution that overthrew a good man.
You shot me in the eye.
It wasn't personal. I was just trying to get out alive. Me and my people.
You shot me in the eye!
Like I said, nothing personal. I'd have shot anyone who stood in my way in that moment.
I will enslave you and feed you scraps of your own flesh for what you did to me, Hume. I'll make you swallow your remaining eye before I am done. And you will thank me for the meal. Such will be your devotion to me.
Christy, you okay?
I'm fine, Ryan.
Don't talk to her. Talk to me. Better yet, listen to me.
Let them go.
Humes, you're so weak. You care so much about one another when you can't even see the truth. Your day is over. The Holy Twist looked upon the earth, and what he saw was sickening. The world was marred by purity. Not a thing could he see that did speak of the wrongness that was surely inside. It had all been buried, as if it were sin. Thus, the lights did fall to cleanse the world for the mutatos, to bring his righteousness and holiness to the land. Such is his will.
You're insane.
You are yesterday's children, while we are the new, here to sweep away the old. So it has been decreed.
And then she did something Ryan hadn't expected. She grabbed Tankard, the Kill Islander, and pulled her 8-inch serrated blade across his throat, slitting it in an instant. The man dropped to the floor, his neck a gaping bloody wound.
Such is his will. I am not Bizarre. I am Beatrix Bizarra. I am the will of the Twist made flesh.
Ryan stood in the gaping window, gaping himself, not knowing what to do.
You hear that, Ryan? Your friends are dying, one by one.
Not my friends. Whitecoats. Manipulators.
Not all of them. Besides, I know you. You one-eyed bastard, Hume. I saw how you acted in New Mutyville. You care for your fellow Humes. You won't let them die on your conscience. You'll try to fight back, no matter the odds.
Ryan thought back to New Mutyville, Resttown as he knew it, and to the lives he'd saved and the lives that had been lost. And he thought back to home and how people had been lost there to a ruthless Muty assault, and to the Low, and to the girls Mildred had argued for on Kill Island, and to Joe. Then, slowly, Ryan shook his head.
Not anymore.
Ryan turned and ran, sprinting away across the playing field, a lone figure in the moonlight.
What? No!
Ryan?
Should we kill him now?
Boyle's knife was trembling in his hand, where he pressed it to Christie's pale throat.
No! Please!
No! He must see this! He must witness their executions to crush his spirit.
I'm thinking he's a long way from being crushed.
Bizarra backhanded the scabby across the face, and several of his white sacks of pus there burst.
Hold them. I shall bring Ryan Cawdor back.
Boyles held his face as he watched Bizarra leap through the broken window and chase after Ryan. The conscious hostages were looking at him as if they might have an opening to escape. But things were too close, too tight. They were tied and could barely hope to stand. It was clear Boyles could kill the others if even one made a successful attempt. Outside in the moonlight, a second figure sprinted across the vegetable patch that dominated the courtyard, following the route Ryan had set off on 30 seconds earlier. Ryan was at the far door, and he dropped the empty gun to free up both hands so he could work the catch there.
Come on. Come on.
The door swung back. He was inside in a heartbeat, leaving the door wide open. Maybe Bizarra should have wondered about that, why Ryan hadn't closed the door behind him to slow her. But she was intense now, chasing the irritant Hume who had caused her to lose an eye. They were matched that way for now, but she would take his remaining eye. No, she would take everything else. Bizarra reached the open door and slowed, expecting a trap. Ryan was still moving. The Muty woman sprang through the door then, looking in the direction of the footsteps. Her prey was halfway up the corridor, sprinting. He looked back. She imagined she could see the fear in his expression, when in truth she could see nothing, only a silhouette, a black shape in the darkness.
Why prolong this, Hume? It's an honor you're being granted. A slave to the new masters of the world.
Ryan stopped running, and his head turned back.
I'm not even going to chill you.
Bizarra stalked down the walkway after Ryan.
I owe you too much for that.
Ryan reached another door, the one he had been looking for. The darkness down this end of the corridor was almost absolute, and using JB's lighter once more, he lit a flame to see what he was doing. The door had a bolt lock, but it was easy to work in the illumination. Ryan drew it back and pushed the double doors open. Behind him, Bizarra was closing in.
Come on, you bitch. Keep following the breadcrumbs.
Ryan stepped out into the cool night air again, grateful that for once it wasn't raining. The wooden shack was waiting across the overgrown field, just as it had been the night before when Saraband had shown Ryan and Christie its contents. Ryan ran, trusting that Bizarra would follow, his legs and arms pumping as he raced through the knee-high leaves, heading toward the shack. Bizarra emerged behind him and watched a moment as Ryan cut across the field. She was smiling, her remaining eye wide with anticipation and excitement.
Where are you going, Hume? There's nowhere left. You can't get out.
Then she saw him in the thin moonlight as Ryan reached the wood shack at the far side of the old playing field and ducked inside. He glanced back before he closed the doors to check that he wasn't being followed.
The deluded fool doesn't realize that I can see him.
She waited a moment longer, then began to stride across the abandoned playing field, scanning with her single eye to confirm there was no other way out. There wasn't. The walls were high here, and each one had been topped by coils of barbed wire and sharpened metal. The Whitecoats hadn't wanted any visitors, and they'd made sure of that. In the shack, Ryan was waiting. He peered out through a crack in the door. Halfway across the field, lit by a silver shaft of moonlight, Bizarra continued to stride toward him, picking up her pace in her anticipation. If he'd had a gun, he could have picked her off. Such was her confidence.
Come on, bitch. I'm ready for you.
Bizarra had the sense to halt a few feet from the door. Ryan stepped back, still watching through the gap in the door, seeing only a silhouette of the mutie.
I know you're in there. Come out now, Ryan. There's nowhere left to run. Come out, and we can watch your women and your friends die together.
Fuck you!
Ah, there you are.
Bizarra turned to look at the door, her single eye seeming to pierce its wood like a laser as she located him. Upstairs in the Araucaria building, as the hulking swampy grabbed Long, Ricky launched himself, bringing all of his weight onto the mutie's arm.
Let her go!
Long's white coat tore as she wrenched herself free. She slipped as she began to run for the door, tripped, and managed to right herself. Ricky was caught around the mutie's shoulders, wrapping himself like a boa constrictor, snatching a handful of Ricky's shirt and throwing him down hard to the floor.
Run, Doc! Save the white coat! She's your best hope!
Go! Go!
Stupid Hume. There will be nowhere left to run out there.
Ricky leapt on the beast's back, pounding his fists into the swampy's ears.
Run!
Ricky caught a vicious clip to the back of his skull and was knocked flying across the lab.
Like a rag dolly.
Slid stock toward Ricky's shaking form as the young warrior struggled to remain conscious. Slid prowled across the room and grabbed Ricky by the neck. Ricky saw spots before his eyes, dark spots like the stars of the night sky and negative. And in one of those spots, he fancied he saw a face. Joe's face, smiling at him. And he knew that he wanted more than anything to let go and join her, to leave this awful fight for survival, for his next breath.
Hey, my friend.
Huh? Doc had thrust his cane's hidden sword blade into the swampy's open mouth with all the force he could muster. Slit stumbled back. Doc stepped forward, driving with power from his leading blade, forcing the four-foot-long blade up through the soft tissue at the roof of the mutie's palate and into the beast's brain. The swampy's grip on Ricky eased. Dark ichor wept from the monster's inhuman eyes as he sagged away, as if his muscles had suddenly ceased to hold him upright. Doc stood for a moment, driving all his strength down that length of blade, twisting it and turning it where it had embedded in the swampy's mouth. Then, Doc wrenched his blade free.
When I said friend, I meant him.
The mutie fell back, vomiting blood. Ricky lay on the floor, barely conscious.
Doc, I thought I told you to run.
Oh, I'm a stubborn old fool who doesn't leave friends behind. You know that by now, don't you?
Beside him, the swampy let out his last breath.
What the hell was that?
Boyles took several swift paces toward the stairwell and gazed up it into the darkness.
Slit? That you, Slit? You okay?
As the mutie peered up the staircase, Christy began to whisper the prayer.
Gaia, hear me. Gaia, be with me.
Boyles turned back from the stairwell, walking back to where the captives waited.
Fuck. I don't like this. I'm gonna chill one of you. Cut down the numbers.
He resumed his position behind Mildred, drawing the knife close to her throat. The knife was wavering in his shaking hand, while his other hand clutched the gun too tightly.
Don't do that. Your boss wouldn't like it. What's her name?
Beatrice.
Mildred's eyes were locked on the mutie's wavering knife.
She wouldn't like it. She gave you orders.
Fuck that and fuck her. I'm gonna do you right here and now. Beatrice hates Humes. What's she gonna say?
The scabby looked up, and he saw Christy rise, the bonds snapping away from her wrists as she spread her arms out. Her hair was a crackling halo around her. Her emerald eyes seemed suddenly clearer, like looking through green glass. And her body was tense now, every muscle charged with power.
What did you...
In an instant, Christy was on the mutie, breaking the wrist of the hand holding the knife. The knife clattered to the floor, and as it did, he brought his other hand up to fire the gun. Christy turned her head, and the bullet skimmed off her brow. Then she was driving herself forward, pushing Boyle's back so that he fell away from Mildred as the medic sunk to the floor. Boyle crashed into the wall, but he was fast and agile. He tried to get Christy's gun into position to shoot her as she descended upon him.
Die, Hume! Shit!
Christy dove into Boyle's and grabbed his head, twisting it on his neck with a sharp yank. Boyle slumped over, drool running down his speckled chin. Christy stood over him, her whole body tense as a wire. Saraband was watching her with incredulity, not quite sure what he had seen in the darkened corridor.
What? What just happened?
Lying on the floor where she had thrown herself, Mildred scooted around and tried to see.
Christy, everything okay?
Not everything. Ryan's out there somewhere. I have to go.
Christy moved toward the shattered window, only to feel the familiar wave of weakness. She slumped against the window frame, struggling to stay upright.
No, not now.
Christy, listen to me. Ryan knows what he's doing. He's a survivor. But you need to get the gun and load it while you still have the strength.
Christy turned back to Mildred and nodded.
You're right.
Christy stumbled back across the hallway and sunk to her knees before the drooling scabby, plucking the gun from his hands. Somewhere in her pockets, she still had some ammo left for the Glock. She just needed to locate it. Outside the shack, Azara had drawn a knife into her hand, 8 inches of serrated blade designed to cut meat. She raised the knife up and behind her head, point down, ready to stab. Ryan girded himself, not wanting to act too soon. Azara stepped forward and reached for the door with her free hand, pulling it and leaping back. Azara saw Ryan and he saw her. They were facing one another through that gap in the door. Behind Ryan, darkness, just a scent, a smell that might have been a clue if Beatrice hadn't ignored it. She smiled, showing her teeth as she locked gazes with Ryan.
I'm going to cut you into pieces and feed them to you for what you have done to me, Hume.
Ryan said nothing. He just tensed, waiting. Azara stepped forward again, her foot splashing as it discovered the puddle of clear liquid within, where Ryan had tipped out contents from the still inside the shack. Then she shoved the door wider and lunged into the shack with her knife poised. Ryan moved, blocking the knife as it came down toward his face, deflecting the blow so that it went sideways and caused Azara to step forward. Ryan rushed her then, barging into her, keeping her momentum going. She crashed into the still where the alka fuel was brewed and glass tubes and containers shattered. Liquid splashed everywhere, and Azara went plummeting into the still itself, tipping its huge vat. Ryan leapt back, scrambling on fast, desperate feet. Azara looked at Ryan as he stood in the doorway to the wooden shack.
You have nowhere to run.
Neither do you.
Then Ryan dropped the lit lighter he held in his cupped hand, and it spiraled through the air into the pool of spilled alcohol that carpeted the floor of the shack.
No!
Standing amid the fire, Azara suddenly felt her clothes catch light, and the flames raced up her body where it had been doused in the alcohol. Ryan stepped back from the burning woman in the burning shack, watching as the flames danced higher and higher into the night. It smelled like a bar he had once visited, and he smiled at the memory. Once all this was done, maybe he'd just get drunk. Right now, he moved, jogging back to the school buildings as the shack and its occupant burned behind him. Ryan ran back to the Institute building to rescue Christy.
Please be alive.
If she wasn't, if the mutie son of a bitch had killed her, Ryan knew he would lose a part of himself and feared he could never recover it. As it was, when he crossed the courtyard, he could see that the mutie was down, and Mildred seemed to be in the process of untying people's bonds. She was alert enough to raise the Glock and frame Ryan in its sights before he reached the shattered window.
It's okay, Mildred. It's just me.
What about Bazaara?
Burning in hell? At least burning here.
I heard the explosion, saw the flash of light, and wondered if that was you.
Ryan climbed in through the window and scanned the corridor, noting that Mish was awake, but groggy, while JB and Jack were still out. He made his way over to Christy, who was sitting slumped with her back to the far wall, looking out at the moonlit courtyard with unfocused eyes.
Christy?
She looked up and smiled in recognition.
Lover.
Ryan leaned down and pushed the hair from her face, then saw the streak of blood his fingers left there.
I'm sorry. I'm messed up.
It doesn't matter.
Ryan looked around again, realization dawning.
Fireblast, where's Doc? Where's Ricky?
I don't know. I've been keeping everyone here protected, Ryan. I should have...
No. That was the right thing to do, Mildred. Don't beat yourself up. I'll go scout for them.
Ryan trotted away, jogging swiftly down the corridor toward where the two bikes and their dead riders were strewn, wisps of black smoke still trailing from one engine. As he ran past the stairwell, Ryan didn't even notice the eyes watching him. He could have been assassinated in that instant. His inattention would have been the death of him. Except that the eyes were Doc Tanner's and Ricky's and Professor Long's, watching from the shadows of the landing, trying to judge whether it might be safe to make a break for it. Ricky recognized Ryan's rangy, muscular form as it ran past, silhouetted against the window.
Ryan!
Ryan skipped to a halt, spun and dropped. He looked back where he had been. Then his eye glided over the darkened staircase.
Ryan, it's me, Ricky. It's safe down there?
Yeah.
Ryan rose to standing position and paced to the foot of the stairs.
Well, define safe for me. You?
We had a contretemps. Nothing we couldn't handle. Right, Ricky?
Remind me not to leave my blasters behind. I mean ever.
Ricky, Doc, and the slender figure of Professor Long emerged into the light at the foot of the stairs, and Ryan swiftly brought them up to speed as they made their way back down the corridor to rejoin the others.
Crazy bitch had me in her sights, so I gambled she was mad enough to follow me.
You took one hell of a risk. What if we'd all been killed? Could you have lived with that?
No.
It took a while. People needed to be patched up. People needed to be woken up. Mildred did what she could with very limited medical supplies, applying salves and bandages and checking the nasty wounds that Saraband had received at the wrong end of a whip chain. Two of the Institute's sec-men had survived. The one had a broken nose where his faceplate had been caved in during the siege.
You want to maybe look at redesigning those. Toughened plastic, something like that.
You think?
You want to get your face smashed in again, be my guest. Those blasters of yours, though, they take a lot of reloading. You should try a Spectre M4, maybe, since you like them Italian-made.
Many people were dead, including 10 sec-men, two of whom had been sleeping in their beds when the attack started and had been killed before they really knew what was going on. Another casualty was Professor Dale Galapagos, which was regrettable.
He had been doing some very bold research. I don't know where we go without him.
The group took a moment's solemnity, and Ryan pondered what the white coat had made them do and how pointless it had all been. And then he remembered the gunner out front, and he realized there was still one loose end.
Ricky, you want a piece of the action?
Me? Well, sure.
Okay, let's go.
Two minutes later, Ryan was walking the corridor to where the pickup truck was located, where the gunner was watching the far end. It was simple enough to approach in the dark. The gunman couldn't even see him from his angle so long as Ryan stuck to the shadows. As he got close, Ryan saw that the guy was smoking a joint while he waited, saw it and smelled it. He was slouched against the Gatling gun and looking bored. Still, he was alert enough to hear the approaching footsteps.
Hello? Someone there?
What's your name?
Jay. Shit, who is that? Who the fuck is there?
Your friends are all dead, Jay.
Fuck you!
The gunman triggered the Gatling gun and fired off a couple dozen rounds into the corridor. Ryan waited, breathing steadily, staying calm despite his exhaustion.
Yeah, thought that'd do you. You're dead, you heathen fuck! Dead!
I can shoot you right where you are, and you'd never even see it coming.
Standing on the flatbed of the truck, the gunman turned around like a dog chasing its own tail, searching for the source of Ryan's voice. He was clearly spooked now.
Where are you? Show yourself!
Or you can turn around right now.
I came here for something. Can't leave without it.
Well, I guess I can't tell you not to throw your life away, can I? I can't convince you?
The gunman was scared, and he had a twitchy trigger finger that just couldn't resist unleashing another burst of fire. And then the Gatling gun clicked on empty, and the gunman was just a man, standing on the back of a truck that had wedged itself into the doors of an old school building. The silver moonlight painted Ryan like he was a specter when he stepped out into the corridor.
You came here for the heart of your angel, right?
Oh, nuke shit. Nuke fucking shit!
Jay had the presence of mind to reach for the gun he wore at his hip, but he was already far too late thinking of it. And when he pulled it out, his hand was trembling so much he would have had trouble hitting the school building, let alone Ryan.
Look to the heavens.
What?
The gunman looked up. Ricky dropped the old computer monitor from the window located directly above the truck. Painted in the moonlight, it fell like a silver stream, or like an angel descending from heaven. It landed on the gunman's skull with enough force to knock him flat. He lay there on the flatbed of the pickup truck, a monitor crushing his head as if it were a part of him. Like that old comedy skit of the out-of-work newscaster, wearing a television set on his head.
If you do see your angel, say hello for me.
Sometimes angels fell, even the good ones.
Deathlands number 144, Memory Box, is a graphic audio production. Deathlands and all characters are trademarks owned by Graphic Audio, LLC, used by others under license. Copyright 2021, Graphic Audio, LLC. All rights reserved. Story and production copyright 2022, Graphic Audio, LLC. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan as Ryan and Jack, Terrence Aselford as JB and Doc, Alejandro Ruiz as Ricky, Lolita Horn as Mildred, Colleen Delaney as Christy, Amanda Forstrom as Mish, Hannah Curtis as Beatrice, and Julianne Elliott as Professor Long, with Bradley Foster Smith, David Zitney, Eric Messner, Jonathan Lee Taylor, Kaylee Rivera, Amanda Lorien, Kelly Baskin, Ken Jackson, Mark Harrietta, Martin Dickinson, Peter Holdway, Rainer Gabriel, Scott McCormick, Michael Goetz, Tyler Herchuk, and Yasmin Toison. Directed by David Zitney. Adapted for graphic audio by Rick Hoskin and David Zitney. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producer, Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by David Zitney. Theme arrangement by David Zitney, based on a theme by Mark Ashby. If you enjoyed Deathlands number 144, Memory Box, check out our whole catalog of Deathlands releases, available now at www.graphicaudio.net.
Friday, May 2nd, 2352. There's a race for what's left of space. It's company versus union, and all that stands between.
For every trouble we meet, we blow a hole in you.
Is Pell Station. Espionage.
I need a cover.
Treachery.
What can you offer me?
Sedition.
Pell is under riot conditions.
Who will get Pell in the end? And what will be left of it when that happens?
Let it come.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,500 titles to choose from. Listen to over 150 binge-worthy series, from sci-fi to fantasy, to graphic novels, to mystery thrillers, to action-adventure, to westerns, and more. Check out our exclusive titles, available only in our dramatized adaptation format. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase a download series set at graphicaudio.net. You can also earn loyalty reward points, redeemable towards future online purchases. Stream audiobooks immediately or download them to listen offline on your mobile phone or tablet using our Graphic Audio Access app, which is available on all Android and Apple devices. We like being radically different when it comes to our audiobook productions. Listen to A Movie in Your Mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Visit our web store today at graphicaudio.net.